Good morning. I will call this meeting of the Rules Committee to order and note for the record that we do have a quorum present. Our order of business this morning is Senate File 37, Representative Herr. And so would you please come up? And I will move Senate File 37 to get it before the committee with a recommendation that it is referred to the General Register. Representative Herr, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Chair Long. And I'm hoping not to keep you all here too long. Members, I really appreciate the opportunity to have House File 173 heard. That is proposing a constitutional amendment to codify a right to equality. The proposed amendment would be submitted to the voters at the 2024 state general election, and if ratified, would take effect on January 1st of 2025. Today, 27 states have guarantees of equal rights in their constitutions. Most of us have heard the ERA debate at the Minnesota State. Well, you guys are so close in this room. I was like, they're right there. State legislature, because, and so, you know, most of us who've been here have already heard this bill being heard multiple times on the floor. And I think that a lot of times this conversation, because of difference in values that shape our opinions and views, we argue perceptions of right or wrong or good or bad. And we fixate on feelings, and I've heard arguments from members that people already feel like they have equal rights, that women and people from marginalized communities are powerful, smart, and strong, and because of this, that we don't need laws or constitutions to tell us that they are equal. Today, I would like to shift that conversation. I don't want to spend time dismissing any beliefs or values that people hold. You are entitled to them. I want to discuss something that I believe we all agree on, that is that we want Minnesotans, all of them, to thrive. I would like to provide just a little bit of information before we get into our testifiers, and we have two today, just to sort of level set for us. So I'm somebody who is a lifelong learner. I'm a scholar. I've been working at my doctor for 8 years. Hopefully this is the year I finish. The legislature's kind of gotten in my way. But I wanted to just see what the data tells me about the well-being of women. And I looked at studies measuring well-being of women across and cross-referenced it to states that have codified rights of equality. And this is what I found. One reporter cities where women are the most successful, 9 out of those 10 cities are states that have codified ERA. And in another report of states that are best for women in business, 4 out of the 5 best states are states that have codified ERA. In the 2020 Georgetown Institute for Women, Peace, and Security, on the best and worst states to be a woman, 3 out of the 3 worst states are states that do not have ERA provisions. The 12 criteria they used were employment, working poor, state legislature, college degree, reproductive health access, legal protection, discriminatory norms, maternal mortality, intimate partner violence, gun deaths, and healthcare affordability and community safety. When we look at disparities in other categories, we see something very similar. U.S. News reported that employment gap by disability, people with disabilities are 2.5 times more likely to be unemployed than people with disabilities. Maine had the greatest gap. Maine does not have equal rights codified in their constitution. Employment gap by race, Hawaii had the smallest gap and North Dakota the largest gap. Hawaii has equal rights codified in their constitution. North Dakota does not. Income gap by race. South Dakota had the largest gap, New Hampshire the smallest. And you can guess which one has protection and which one does not. When it comes to the LGBTQ plus community, the ACLU tracks anti-LGBTQ bills. Of states with the greatest number of legislation attacking LGBTQ people, that's 10 or more, 14 of the 14 states do not have gender or sexual orientation codified in their constitution. I could continue with the statistics and why codifying this proposed ERA language into our state constitution would be good, but I think it would be best to hear from our testifiers today. And Chair Long, I do have two testifiers here. If when you're ready, you can call them up.
Fantastic. I think we have Suzanne Wilhite as our first testifier, the president of ERA of Minnesota. Welcome, and please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Long and members. Thank you for letting me speak. My name is Suzanne Wilhite, and I am the volunteer president of ERA Minnesota. I'm here to testify for our organization's support for the Minnesota House to pass the Equal Rights Amendment, the Senate File 37, in the Rules Committee. The mission of ERA Minnesota is twofold. One is to get an Equal Rights Amendment in our state constitution, and then also into our federal constitution. So we do both of those. And we want the federal ERA as a 28th Amendment. Because our constitutions are a proclamation of our state and national foundational values. And they need to declare equal rights that we the people includes all the people. Currently, neither the Minnesota nor the U.S. constitutions guarantee equal legal rights for all people. An explicit prohibition of race, color, creed, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, age, disability, national origin, is not contained in either our U.S. or Minnesota Constitution. The ERA in Minnesota would provide that equality of rights for all people under the law. And we need the ERA, as Kali, Representative Herr, has said, to ensure equal pay for equal work, fair health care coverage, protection from sexual violence, and workplace discrimination protections. Sex discrimination cases have gone all the way to the Supreme Court and have been no remedy. Even Justice Scalia stated in 2011 that certainly the Constitution does not require discrimination on the basis of sex. The only issue is whether it prohibits it. It doesn't. Nobody ever thought that's what it meant. Nobody ever voted for that. Well, partly because women were allowed to vote for that, and they weren't involved. As Kali mentioned, 27 other states have a state equal rights amendment currently. And so this is not unforeseen territory, or there's not unintended consequences here. We know from those states how this works. California has had a state ERA since 1869. Florida, Iowa, Nevada passed the same language that we're proposing for Minnesota in 2022, with 58% of their citizens voting yes. We need a state ERA to provide foundation for legal equality in Minnesota in our state constitution. There was a March 2022 report from the Minnesota Attorney General's Advisory Task Force on expanding the economic security of women. They documented several points. I bring out a few here. Minnesota women, on average, make 79 cents for every dollar that men make. The wage gap, even larger for women of color, American Indian women, Latina, Native, Black women, at 54 to 61 cents, half. That's another year they're working for every dollar that white men earn. Women make up the majority of workers paid at or below minimum wage, even when they hold an advanced degree. Women are underrepresented in high-paying trade, science, technology, STEM, career positions, jobs, and the shortage of childcare and lack of widespread family leave, which I think is getting remedied, further disadvantages women economically. So there's an urgency to foundationally address inequality based on discrimination. We support passing ERA bill in 2023 so voters have time to learn and understand the value of legal equality. We believe elected legislators should allow Minnesotans to vote for themselves whether or not to add the Equal Rights Amendment to our state constitution 2024. So equality for all people is necessary and long overdue. So I thank you for your time and your vote. Yes.
Thank you so much. Our next testifier is former Representative Betty Folliard and the ERA Minnesota founder. Welcome, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Betty Folliard, former state representative and founder of ERA Minnesota, thank you for having me today. This Equal Rights Amendment ballot initiative, when enacted by the voters, will refresh our state constitution, which was written in 1857, before the Civil War, and badly needs a makeover, to bring it up to the 21st century and to reflect our Minnesota values. Minnesota is one of a minority of states that still do not recognize gender equality in their constitutions. You heard that 27 states have it. In addition, you heard that Nevada passed it by almost 58% of the population on November 8th, 2022. And New York currently has passed it through two consecutive legislatures. That's their process. And it's now going on the November 2024 general election ballot. Note that each one of the categories that are mentioned in the bill are a majority women. But historically, women have not received the same privilege as men in our justice system and in our society. Most state ERAs have been around for 40 years. The oldest is 140 years old. It just shows that there's nothing apocalyptic about the Equal Rights Amendment. The ERA enshrined in our Minnesota Constitution will prohibit laws and policies based on historical stereotypes. It will provide a constitutional basis that gives people who are victimized by gender-based violence legal recourse in the courts, and it will help ensure that women and persons with uteruses can work safely and continue to earn needed income during their pregnancy. We're simply asking the legislature to let the people vote on equality. So why do we still need the ERA? Because women on average here in this state make 79 cents to a man's dollar, with much, much larger inequities for women of color, Black, Indigenous, Latina, Asian women, and women of color, because many more elderly women than men live in poverty, because two-thirds of minimum wage earners and two-thirds of tipped workers are women, because one in five women will be raped during their lifetime, and less than 1% of rapes lead to felony convictions, because we're still fighting the battle for voting rights for all, because women still get fired for being pregnant, because child care can cost more than college, because some bosses deny workers birth control coverage, and because women fight and die for their country and they still don't have equal rights, and because women aren't willing to wait another 247 years for equality. That's why. So I urge you to vote yes on SF-37. I sent some things electronically to Ms. Stewart that also include the AG's report that was sent to the legislature last year in 2022. And it has a lot of the statistics specific to Minnesota. And as well, I put in an article to the Center on Gender, on Women, Gender, and Public Policy from the University of Minnesota that has all of the references to the statistics that I just shared so that you have those, members. With that, I ask you to vote yes, and I thank you very much for your consideration. And I hope I never have to testify again on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Why don't we take questions first, and then we will go to the amendment after questions. Representative O'Neill.
Wow. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was a lot. So we have the Human Rights Act in our statutes. And I'm kind of aghast that the testifier said women get fired for being pregnant because we have the Human Rights Act that clearly protect that kind of behavior. They have a recourse if that does happen. Let me just ask you, Representative Herr, what laws currently are on our Minnesota statutes that infringe on the rights of women? I'll just leave it at that.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you, Representative O'Neill, for the question. I know it is a lot. And so we have a lot of rules on the books that try to protect people, and I can say that I think that our laws don't always work the way that they should. And especially as a person of color who's had my property rights violated, have experienced racism at work, like there's laws that protect me against all of those things, but I experience them on the daily. And so I think that as legislators, I could go through all of the laws within statute that are supposed to protect us, whether it's in the workplace or it's in schools or it's in, our healthcare, or because I actually went through last night and looked at the statutes and printed out every proposed amendment in the state of Minnesota. There's been 213, 120 been ratified. I looked at the Constitution. I looked up how many times creed or sexual orientation or discrimination showed up in our statute, and I noted all of it. And the truth is that we do have a lot of laws on the books, and they don't work as they should. And that's why I think that it is really important for us to pass the ERA, because I knew, and I, you know, listened to the testimony in the Senate. And I want to just make sure that everyone understands that ERA isn't going to solve discrimination against women. Like none of these other laws that we have in books, they don't solve racial discrimination. They don't solve religious discrimination. But what the ERA is it's a tool that can be used in the courts when there is alleged discrimination, and nothing changes that, even after the day that we should pass it, should Minnesota decide to. And then someday a court will interpret how this amendment applies to certain cases, and then case law will develop. And so You know, I wish that there was an easy answer to say there are, you know, here are 10 laws and it protects women, it protects people, and then it works and it doesn't. And so I know that's not, I'm not trying to get around answering your question. I just think it's a really big question, and I wish that laws work the way that they do, they should, and so that people really are protected. And unless it's codified in our Constitution to ensure that we have a way to base what, you know, what we say is important to us as Minnesotans, you know, that we'll continue to have laws that are not always effective when they should be.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the testifier said that the reason for this in the Constitution is to prohibit laws on our books from being discriminatory. And you had just said clearly, we have the Human Rights Act, which is very heavy-handed, as you know. So someone that is pregnant in the workplace and gets fired for that has recourse, like immediate recourse, and can go through the courts. And that business that did that would be severely punished, to be honest with you. I mean, the Human Rights Act is nothing to mess with. It's very, very powerful. So I'm having a really hard time kind of understanding what we're doing, because literally the testimony said, this is to prohibit the laws on our books from being discriminatory. But, and you said basically that there's nothing wrong with our laws, but they just don't work the way they're supposed to. Well, I don't know that adding this is going to then make the laws work better. I just don't see the argument. The testifier also said that this protects people with uteruses. And so, but that isn't, the language in the amendment is much, much more expansive. And I will compliment you on one thing that I found very transparent, which is you have put into the language that will be on the ballot clearly what you're intending to do. And you have included this time, because we've obviously had this for quite some time, but you've been very, very specific in your language. And you've said, you know, race, color, creed, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, age, disability, ancestry, or national origin. And so that is very expansive. And that's much, much more than a person with uterus. So I just think we need to be very clear what we're doing. That's not what we're doing. Clearly, that's not what we're doing. And so I'm just going to go right into the next question, which is, so does this, how does this work in the real world with a biological male in sports against a woman, a girl? So that is a very relevant topic right now, and this seems to address that. Can you tell us how this would address it?
Representative Hurt.
Chair Long, Representative O'Neill, I just want to first say that, you know, and I always repeat, you and I always have really honest and, like, you know, truthful conversation with each other, and I appreciate that. I just want to state for the record that I didn't say that our laws right now are fine. I say we have laws on the books, but they don't always work as they should. And I, you know, and I would also say that for your particular question about sports, and I know that the issue of Title IX comes up a lot, and to be honest, we're trying to be as inclusive in this language as possible because these particular classes of individuals often experience discrimination in ways in which, like, even though we have, you know, if you look at the human rights statute, you're right, it is very inclusive, but I want to be very clear that it is really difficult for women to prove, a woman to prove that someone fired you because you were pregnant. So I worked in the private sector for 15 years, and we have a lot of really good ways of telling somebody why we're letting them go without actually telling them why we're letting them go. And so just in the case of, like, when women are raped, it's really hard for a woman to prove that she was raped. And so when we say that, well, the law's already there and it's really heavy-handed and it's there to protect women, sure, it is. And that's what we're trying to do. But again, it is really difficult for women to actually get the justice that they deserve within the current laws already. And this allows us one more tool in order to address whether you're a woman, a person with a uterus, whether you're a trans individual, that there is a tool now that can be used, and then the courts will develop case laws in order for us to really understand how this is going to be applied. And so I don't know how this will work in the future. Should there be a case where somebody brings and there's a lawsuit around, you know, a trans athlete, that would play out in the courts, and we will see how this will actually apply to that. And I will just be really clear that Title IX actually doesn't really have anything to do with sports. That actually just, what Title IX talks about is it prohibits discrimination based on sex and education programs and activities, and that Title IX opened the ability for women to play sports. But, you know, again, the whole issue is around our trans and competing. You know, I would like to be able to sit here and tell you how this is going to impact that, but I can't. and that, you know, many times we put laws into place that we don't know exactly how those laws, like the bill that I put forward to protect duty disability officers, I don't actually know how that's going to play out. But that is really important for us to continue to do, to look at solving an issue that is longstanding. And so, you know, I wish that I had a different answer for you, but that's what I know to be, and I would hate to try to make a case for something that is still going to be happening in the future. And I will also just state that trans women are women. And so, you know, like I've said this in my comments before, my children were competitive athletes for decades. And in their sports, never one time did they even have the chance to compete against a trans girl. And so we have made a really big issue over something that and I don't want to minimize anybody's experience and people whose daughters are competing and they work really hard. Like, this is not, to disparage any of them, but our trans girls, there's so few of them competing in sports anyways that this has become such a huge issue, and we've used it sort of as a shield to prevent us from doing other things, that I just want us to maybe think about the impact of the things we're asking and what that will mean in these individual cases will play out, should they play out in the future, and how will this tool assist that? I don't know.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we have something at the legislature, as you know, you've been here a long time, about legislative intent. Mm-hmm. And so this clearly, what is the purpose of this, is to guide the courts. Mm-hmm. So when whichever court it is, whether it's sister court, appellate court, or the Supreme Court, will look at this testimony right here, right now, mm-hmm. and listen to our collective legislative intent, mm-hmm. which is why I was asking you that question, because it goes to legislative intent. So I'm just wondering if you could, I understand the court's going to do what they're going to do, but mm-hmm. they also, this hearing right now, this conversation we're happening right now, they will actually review. Mm-hmm. And so as the author, and we've had testimony kind of to the contrary, because it was clearly stated that this is, talk about people with uteruses. Well, people with uteruses are clearly not biological males. So I want to be clear what we're doing here. If you could just clearly state your legislative intent for moving this forward.
Representative Hurt.
Chair Long, I represent O'Neill. My legislative intent is to be as inclusive as possible in this language, and that, in our current statutes already, sexual orientation is used 53 times in Minnesota statute. Gender identity is used 6 times. And so national origin, 80, ancestry, 6, creed, 37. That, you know, the terms that we are using within this language is not new. And so the intent is that different groups experience society in different ways, and that as inclusive as we can be, we talk about equal rights, it should be equal rights for all. And so that is the intent, is to be as inclusive. And somebody can be born a biological female and not identify as female, and that I don't get to make that judgment for them, we don't get to make that judgment, and that our language should allow for how people show up in society, for them to be able to show up in that way, and we shouldn't discriminate just because we don't understand or we may not be able to identify with that. So that's what I believe is the legislative intent of this language.
Mr. Chair, final comment.
Final question, Representative O'Neill. Yeah.
I appreciate the time. I know we don't have a ton. So my final question and concern would be pitting one group against the other. And the sports is just a very clear, relevant thing that's happening right now. So you've got a biological woman or girl competing against a biological male. And you've seen how the biological male has clearly outperformed. There's one instance where the biological male actually tied, but the biological male was given the trophy. There's all kinds of stories out there. So my question is, if there's a preference, because that's sort of what this is meaning, who gets it?
Representative Hurt.
Chair Long, Representative O'Neill. I don't think this law actually addresses that, and it's not intended to. And I would say that, you know, for every story we hear of a biological male beating a female, there's also stories, and, you know, there was a very visible lawsuit that happened. I can't remember the school, but it was out east, and it was a biological girl suing a trans girl, and saying that there was an unfair advantage, and then that girl actually beat the trans girl in the competition. And so there are a lot of things that, like, when we lift up cases, that there are nuances that we maybe are not putting out there. And so I would just say that again, this isn't going to fix everybody else's one-off situation, and no law that we have will address a specific thing in this way. And what we can do is understand that in society, we have structures and systems that do not always treat everyone the same. And we are trying to address historic structures and systems that have been discriminatory or have not been fair. And we won't catch everything in that, but we can't not try because we can't. So that's my response to the question.
Thank you, Representative Herr. We have an amendment. I believe this is Leader Damon's amendment, the A1. Would you care to offer your amendment and speak to it?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you, Representative Herr, for bringing this forward. And although the discussion on this is very nuanced and there's a lot to be talked about and considered, you know, originally the ERA was to protect women, and that is the origin. And I think that we've gone quite far from that in what we're seeing here. But if this is as important as it is and an issue that is facing us this close, my amendment would move the date earlier by a year. That if this is such an issue here in Minnesota that we need to protect all people that somehow are not protected under the other places of our law, I don't want anyone left out. And I would like to see us move the date from 2024 to 2023 and handle this. I know there may be a cost to it, and I'm prepared with that. The estimate on the cost potentially for that election would be about $5 million. But with a $17.5 billion surplus, I know we're toward the end of the session and we're winding down. If this is a priority, I would suggest that we would consider changing the date to 1 year earlier, and I would request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Herr.
Chair Long and Minority Leader Damon, thank you for the amendment and the suggestion. I agree with you that this is a really urgent situation, and I would love to move the date up too. But I would ask for a no vote on this because the truth is that a constitutional amendment requires quite a bit of work and education. And I remember that the last time this came forward, my GOP friends across the aisle were very concerned that Minnesotans would not know enough to be able to vote on a constitutional amendment like this, and they may not understand the definitions of the words within the language, and that in order for us to ensure that our Minnesotans have the right information in order to make a good decision whether they're going to vote to codify ERA or not, that we actually give our advocates the time in order to do that education. And so though I would love to accept this, and I think it is a great idea to move it up sooner because justice can't come soon enough, but I also want to make sure that we are address the concerns of our GOP colleagues from previous years about making sure that voters are informed and not being sure that voters could make good decisions on something so complex. And so with that, I do ask for a no vote.
A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long?
No.
Chair Long, no. Vice Chair Hollins?
No.
Hollins, no. Leader Damon?
Yes.
Damon, yes. Representative Engen?
Yes.
Engen, yes. Representative Howard?
No.
Howard, no. Representative Hewitt is excused. Representative Jordan?
No.
Jordan, no. Representative Lilly?
No.
Lilly, no. Representative Moeller is excused. Representative Nash is excused. Representative Olson?
No.
Representative O'Neill?
Yes.
Yes, O'Neill. Representative Pulowski?
No.
Pulowski, no. Representative Robbins?
Yes.
Robbins, yes. Representative Torkelson?
Yes.
Torkelson, yes, and Representative Wolgamott is excused. Mr. Chair, there are 5 ayes and 7 nays.
There being 5 ayes and 7 nays, the amendment is not adopted. I do not see other hands to discuss the bill, so Representative Herr, would you care to make closing remarks?
Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you, committee, for the discussion. And I do always learn something every time I am able to present a bill in front of people. And so, and I would just want to acknowledge, Representative O'Neill's concerns. And as I thought about what this means, that there were a lot of things that I thought about, too, about what does this mean when it goes into effect. And I was rest assured in knowing that 27 states have already done this, and they have case laws, and they have experienced every issue that we've discussed today. And those states still stand. They are still operate. They are states that have made gains within what it, when we look at equality for all the different classes that we have that is in the current language. And so I really appreciate the time today. I did just want to share really quick that as I look back at all of the proposed amendments that have been proposed since the start of Minnesota, as I mentioned, there was 213. And I would say that at every turn of the way, women have been fighting for equality. And the first time an amendment to give women rights was in 1875 to authorize a legislature to grant women suffrage in school affairs. And then the next time was to authorize women to vote in local option elections in 1877. And the next time after that was to prevent women to vote for and serve on library boards in 1898. And that I am dismayed at the fact that we are in 2023 and women are still asking for a constitutional amendment in order for them to be equal within our Constitution. And so I ask that for us to decide that we will no longer continue to have to ask for constitutional amendment for women and people from different classes. And that you're right, Leader Damuth. In the past, you know, it was just the definition of women and inequality in that. But the genesis of this was also from the 1800s. And as we have developed as a society and as we have gained education and we've understand science better, we understand that just looking for equal rights for in terms of sex is not enough, and that our society is complex and we have people who do not hold the same rights and status as what we would our binary terms, and that we have to include everyone in that. And so I thank you all for hearing what we have to say today, and I look forward to the support of ERA in passing this out of rules today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hurd. I renew my motion that Senate File 37 be referred to the General Register. Leader Damon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had questions on our side of the aisle. Is it possible to still be recognized?
I didn't see hands before we went to the closing remarks of Representative Burr, so we had plenty of time for folks to raise their hands as we were going through the discussion today. It's customary to let the bill author close.
And I fully understand, Mr. Chair, but after my amendment, there was still two questions that were here, and they were recognized. If you are not going to take the questions, I understand that, Mr. Chair. You have the authority to do that, but what I would ask is a roll call on this bill.
Okay. Leader Damuth has requested a roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long?
Aye.
Long, aye. Vice Chair Hollins?
Aye.
Hollins, aye. Leader Damuth?
No.
Damuth, no. Representative Engen?
No.
Engen, no. Representative Howard?
Aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Hewitt, aye. Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Moeller is excused. Representative Nash is excused. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative O'Neill?
No.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Robbins?
No.
Robbins, no. Representative Torkelson?
No.
Torkelson, no. Representative Wolgamott is excused. Mr. Chair, there are 8 ayes and 5 nays.
There being 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails, and Senate File 37 is referred to the General Register. Representative Olson? Okay, no problem. So we will be coming back at likely 11:15 or so after we are done with the floor. Are we going to be in this room? TBD on the room. So we will let folks know when we are on the floor. And with that, we stand in recess. All right, we are calling back to order the Rules Committee. And our next order of business is the calendar for the day for Monday, May 22nd. We're proposing two items for the calendar for the day. The first is Senate File 3307, the Technical Corrections Bill, and the second is Senate File 37, which we heard this morning. So I will move the adoption of the calendar for the day pursuant to Rule 1.21 and 3.33. The Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will designate Monday, May 22nd for the adoption of the calendar for the day and establish a pre-filing requirement for amendments offered to those bills. And just to spell out the amendment deadlines, the amendment deadline for Senate File 37 will be noon on Sunday, May 21st, pursuant to Rule 3.33, Paragraph G, which states House Rule 3.33 may be waived, or the deadlines in this rule may be extended for an individual bill or waived for all bills under a certain date by the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. The deadline for primary amendments to Senate File 3307 will be Monday, May 22nd at 11 a.m., and the deadline for secondary amendments to Senate File 3307 will be Monday, May 22nd at 12:30 p.m. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
The calendar for the day is adopted, and that is our business before rules, so we are adjourned.